This is UN News. I'm Conor Lennon. If emergency fuel is not immediately allowed into the Gaza Strip, five key hospitals could be forced to close and other vital facilities could grind to a halt, according to the head of the UN Humanitarian Office, OCHA, in the occupied Palestinian territory. David Carden said on Wednesday that more than 2,000 patients would be immediately put at risk if power ran out, and 1.6 million others throughout Gaza who have been living for years with an Israeli blockade. Since the 2nd of August, the Israeli authorities have stopped fuel entering the enclave in response to the launching of incendiary kites into the country across the Gaza border. Mustafa Al-Gamal asked Mr. Carden how the fuel shortages were affecting life overall on the ground there.
Gaza has been affected by a chronic electricity deficit for more than a decade, severely disrupting the delivery of basic health care, water and sanitation services, and undermining already vulnerable livelihoods and living conditions. And currently, there's nearly 2 million Palestinian residents of Gaza who receive electricity for no more than 4 hours each day. So as a result, you have public and NGO-supported hospitals, water treatment sites, sewage treatment facilities, and also solid waste collection services have been forced to rely on backup generators to maintain provision of these critical services. Now, since the 2nd of August, the Israeli authorities have prohibited the entry of fuel into Gaza in response to the continuous launching of incendiary kites and balloons from Gaza into Israel, which they consider to be a security threat. And this also followed an early restriction on the entry of fuel that lasted from the 16th to the 24th of July. So right now, we need at least 60,000 litres of emergency fuel for delivery to about 55 critical health and water and sanitation facilities across Gaza. We also have a problem with the funding for emergency fuel because it's anticipated to run out in the second half of August. And we need about 4.5 million to ensure that a minimum level of services can continue to run until the end of the year.
And what are the risks if the fuel didn't get in immediately?
Well, the immediate risks are that five hospitals might face possible closure in the coming 3 days. I should say that hospitals and other critical healthcare services have already reduced their operations. And those at the greatest risks are there's more than 2,000 patients in Gaza's hospital who are dependent on electricity to enable them to receive care and treatment. And also medical services for more than 1.6 million other Palestinians may suffer from the lack of emergency fuel at the 54 main health facilities. The other facilities at risk are about 40 of 132 water and sanitation facilities where fuel stocks are only sufficient for about 1 to 2 days. So, you know, we're really faced with a situation where you have more than a million Palestinians at risk of potential disease due to possible sewage overflow at around the 41 main sewage pumping stations in the Gaza Strip.
We heard you visited Gaza yesterday. What did you see there on the ground, and what is OCHA doing to manage the situation?
Well, I went to Gaza to see the situation for myself, also to advocate with Hamas, the de facto authorities on the ground, to see if they can do more to alleviate the fuel situation in Gaza. In terms of what we're doing, since the crisis became very chronic in 2013, you know, the UN has been facilitating the provision of this emergency fuel to the 80 critical hospitals and health clinics, the water and sewage treatment sites, as well as the solid waste collection services, you know, to try to ensure that these services can continue despite interruptions in electricity flow. And as the electricity crisis has been deteriorating each year, the number of services needing emergency fuel has grown. And currently, an average of 950,000 litres is distributed by the UN every month for backup generators to about 250 critical facilities. And OCHA has been working tirelessly to mobilise funding for this UN fuel program. We're also in constant negotiation with the Israeli authorities to try to ensure access of emergency fuel into Gaza and other commodities as well via the Kerem Shalom crossing, which is controlled by Israel. And, you know, this negotiation, we'll have private negotiations with the Israeli authorities, but we've also, we're increasingly going public right now, you know, in order to try to resolve this desperate situation, because, you know, we don't want an outbreak of disease or, you know, other public health concerns.
Speaking of this contact with Israelis, are there any indications that there will be a positive response to UN calls to allow the entry of fuel?
I mean, I think this decision is taken at the political level, and we've been dealing with the COGAT, which is a part of the Israeli government that administers the occupied territories, and they have been taking our request to the higher level. You know, we've been trying to explain, you know, very clearly what the humanitarian impact is. We've been reminding the Israeli authorities of their obligations under international law. And certainly in the past, our advocacy has resulted in shifts in policy. And we certainly hope that it'll be the case this time as well.
And what are the reasons given by the Israelis for restricting the entry of fuel?
Well, I think they basically said that these increased restrictions are in response to the launching of the incendiary kites from Gaza into Israel in the context of the mass demonstrations that started 30th of March this year in Gaza. And it's certainly true that these incendiary kites have caused extensive damage to property and fields inside Israel, and the Israelis also consider them to be a security threat.
Mr. Corden, in the worst-case scenario, what are the UN plans to try to avoid a catastrophe on the ground?
Well, the UN will continue its efforts to try to prevent further deterioration of the current situation. All operational partners on the ground are working closely with the relevant actors on how we can best mitigate this situation. You know, we've asked, in addition to our advocacy with the Israeli authorities, we've also been advocating with the Palestinian authorities, including Hamas in Gaza, to prioritize the provision of fuel for essential services. And in the long term, you know, we also need to come up with longer-term solutions, such as advocating for a full lifting of the blockade on Gaza, because we need to move past this repeated cycle of worsening crises. I mean, we had only in February this year, we also faced an emergency fuel problem. And, you know, it's an ongoing problem, and, you know, we need to try and come up with a political solution to resolve it once and for all.
Mr. Corden, any other word you'd like to add to that?
The plight of the people in the Gaza Strip is pretty dire. You know, in addition to the restrictions that I mentioned before, you know, there's poor drinking water, they have large quantities of sewage flowing into the sea, so there's no respite in the hot summer months. It's dangerous to swim right now. There's very high unemployment. Yeah, and of course, as I said before, it's very difficult for people to get out. Yeah, just spare a thought for our colleagues working in Gaza, and of course, and most importantly, the people of Gaza themselves.